Good evening and welcome to everyone. My name is Paula Rett. I'm the Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome everyone to the meeting this evening on Monday the 6th of December. Welcome to the gentlemen in the public gallery and also to everyone who is watching along on the live stream at YouTube. It's 5:30pm and I officially declare the meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with council's policy, I'll ask the general manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirm.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening, we have myself, Councillor Rett, Deputy Mayor, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street and Councillor Wass. For our staff this evening, we have the General Manager, Mr Arnold, the Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, the Manager of Environmental Services, Mr Dool, Senior Manager, Capital Works, Mr Reed, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, our Customer Services Coordinator, Mrs Villini, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have no apologies this evening. Turning now to confirmation of minutes, the motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting No. 23, held on the 15th of November 2021, be confirmed as a true record. And a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Bastone. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop last Monday evening, the 29th of November, in relation to climate change. Turning now to page 2, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest that they would like to declare? Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a family member who's been nominated for the Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee, but I will not be leaving the room.
Thank you. Are there any further conflicts of interest? No, thank you very much. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed or closed into open session? No, thank you very much. Questions without notice from the public. Does the gentleman in the public gallery wish to ask a question of councillors? Thank you very much. Questions on notice from the public. If you do wish to submit a question on notice, you should send it to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au and it will appear in the following meeting agenda. We had one question on notice. It was from Mr Roger Tong from Kingston Beach and an officer's response from Mr Reeve. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? Councillor Grace.
Yeah, I just have a question. Mayor, as we know, we've been advised from time to time by our staff regarding the Link Road from the overpass to nowhere, as we know it, up to the sports centre. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that council will require a significant amount of fill to undertake that project because of the nature of the ground. That's one question.
Okay.
Is that the case?
I'm not aware. I don't believe that we actually have that road on the Capital Works program at the moment, because it is quite a substantial commitment, but the General Manager might be able to provide some more advice. General Manager.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Grace, it is possible that it may require fill, but at this point in time we don't have a final design, and given the topography in that location, whilst I said it's possible, we won't know until we get to that stage.
My second question is, the why I ask this question is that I do know there is quite an amount of rock fill, from a project that our council's doing with Purple Pig or whatever the name is. at the school, thousands of tons there, and there's another massive amount of fill, if council wanted, from Tolman's Hill, not Tolman's Hill, on the other side, as you come up the outlet, it's all rock fill. I raise this question, Mayor, because this is how we've got to think positive and try and save our ratepayers' money, because I've been notified, Mayor, that a contractor has been fined $13,000 for placing fill on a private property to extend a dam, which, as I said, was a council contract. These are things that, and I guess my question, I've got to come to the question, and the question is, council should be more up to date on our projects, whether they're on the works program tomorrow or the next day. Whenever our staff can see fill that is going to absolutely be wasted and could be put to better use and save our ratepayers thousands of dollars, we should jump for it. That's my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Just in relation to the fill that you're referring to at Kingston Park from Traders in Purple, the majority of the fill that they have had to remove from that first stage of the residential development has already been removed and taken to the quarry. That occurred, I think, some 6 or 8 weeks ago. They had taken out everything that they need to take out, so there's nothing more to come out from there at the moment. The other works that are being done at Kingston Park, I don't know whether you're referring to the second stage of the Kingston Park playground or the park area, the public open space. There's work going on there at the moment, but that's work that we're doing ourselves via a contractor. So there's certainly at this stage no more large amounts of fill that Traders in Purple have indicated that they will be taking out.
Thank you for that. And Madam Mayor, this leads to another question, if I may. Could Council check that out? Because that's different than I'm told. And I just feel that we as a council, it's stone fill, you know, it's a valuable fill.
Yep.
And it is a council contract, and I believe somewhere in the contract between council and the contractor that council allowed them to take the fill to the place where they got fined. I'd ask through you, Mayor, if the General Manager could please look into that. I could be wrong. I'm only quoting on what I have been told. Thank you.
Through you, Mayor. I'm happy to look into that, Councillor Grace, but I can assure you your information is not accurate.
Thank you. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question in relation to the current and ongoing resolutions in the open session on page 57. The resolution title is Bruny Island Boat Club Petition. The status is in progress and the anticipated date of completion is unknown. I was at their AGM yesterday and they seemed to say that it was already finished, and I'm just wondering why we're still saying it's in progress. So,
I believe Mr. Smee can answer that.
Thank you, Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the Boat Club have not signed a lease with the Crown, and that is their ultimate aim. We have been negotiating with them in terms of signing a short-term licence, but their desire to sign a direct lease with the Crown has not been achieved as yet?
I think Councillor Bastow might beg to differ on that one.
They did say that they had signed an agreement with the council as the head, and then that they then, when the council stopped leasing from the Crown, that they would go on and lease from the Crown, and they said that was already done, and yesterday it was under seal. They were signing it under seal. So I will go back to them and inquire again. So thank you, Mr. Smee. My second question is, I'm just wondering how many parking spaces, I know we've been told, but how many parking spaces for cars are there at the Firth Side Park and Ride?
We all look at each other.
I know, sorry. I went up and had a look, that's why I'm asking.
I've got it somewhere in my book.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Bastone, I believe it's in the vicinity of 180, but we will get you the accurate...
That's what I had, and I went up and I couldn't see where 180 cars fitted in any way, shape or form, so thank you.
Somewhere in this little pink book, the figure is written down, and I might find it during the meeting. Councillor Gladright.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a brief statement, if I could. I accidentally missed the climate change workshop that was held last Monday due to a terrible clerical error on my part, so I just wanted it on the record that I sincerely apologise.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much. Two questions, please, Mayor. My first question is about the Scottsdale Aquatic Centre. Well, it's really just about aquatic centres in general. The Aquatic Centre at Scottsdale reopened on the 4th of December following a multi-million dollar upgrade, much to the excitement of locals. So we're told in the newspaper, the upgrade was made possible by a $3 million grant from the state government as part of a pre-election promise, with the remaining $4 million put forward by Dorset Council. With a population of 6,617, Dorset has one-fifth of the population of Kingborough's nearly 40,000 residents. Scottsdale itself has a population of around about 2,500, again, one-fifth the size of Kingston's 10,500. So my two questions on this are, firstly, if Scottsdale has less than 20% of our size, can we please have an aquatic centre? And my second question on that is, now that we're coming into an election year, will you as Mayor be lobbying the politicians to make an aquatic centre part of their election commitments?
Thank you for the question. I wasn't expecting to get one on the Scottsdale Aquatic Centre. I think the key point that you have raised in that question is about the upgrade. It was an upgrade that they received, so they already had a facility that they're value-adding to, which is far different in the economic climate that we have at the moment of building a new purpose-built aquatic facility that we know has come in at $42 million in today's figures to build, if we were to have one at the Kingborough Aquatic Centre. And I think the other important point to make is that Scottsdale is indeed in the marginal electorate of Bass, so there is a very generous $3 million that they have received from the state government. I have to say, in the discussions that we have had with state politicians and indeed federal politicians of all persuasions, and as you can appreciate, in the lead up to a federal election, there have been many requests to find out what our priorities are. There is really no appetite from anyone, including this council that voted unanimously back in August to not proceed with an aquatic centre within Kingborough because of the significant capital projects. There is certainly much more appetite to assist us in expanding the Kingborough Sports Centre with much needed additional indoor courts than there is for an aquatic centre. And I think the difference with Scottsdale is that they don't have a major aquatic centre 15 minutes up the road or 20 minutes up the road that their residents can access easily. So I think the key point, in addition to the capital expenditure, is that it would cost us, we would have to borrow significant funds to provide a capital injection into an aquatic centre. And we would also have to fund the depreciation, and we do know that there is one swimming pool in Australia that actually turns a profit and the others don't, and that was in the feasibility study. So I think it's for all of those reasons, and the fact that we would be looking at an additional $1 million a year just to fund the depreciation and the loss that we would incur from operating an aquatic centre, that would be a significant impost on our residents. Just that loss would equate to about a 2% or 2.4% rate increase per household, and that's without taking into consideration the cost of servicing any loans that we would have to make. So we potentially could be facing 10% rate increase for our portion of building and also then servicing the operational expenditure on an aquatic centre. And I think for all those reasons, and I believe it was a unanimous decision, which you were included in that at that time, it's not something that that we have been pursuing funding for at other levels.
Thank you, Mayor. And so my second question on that is just to clarify that the feasibility study report into an aquatic centre, which was passed unanimously, am I correct, as my recollection is, that the recommendation to which we all agreed in that was that council, one of, I think it's recommendation six in that feasibility study, is that council should set up a project funding committee that will review funding grants and investment options and opportunities and develop a final project funding strategy. So I guess my question is, considering that's part of the recommendation to which we agreed when we unanimously passed the feasibility study as part of that report, where are we on that notion of setting up a project funding committee to investigate grants and things like that, opportunities from the federal government?
General Manager.
Yep, that's better. Through you, Mayor. Councillor Cordova, we're mindful of the council resolution. It will be something the officers will be looking to action in the new year.
Thank you. Mayor, my second line of questions, it's just one question actually, is about water restrictions. And the Mercury newspaper has reported that despite the heaviest rainfall in October since 1943, from December 14, stage one water restrictions are going to apply to areas of Greater Hobart, and that of course includes Taroona, Kingston, Blackmans Bay, Margate and Howden. Potentially a few other places, the map's available on the website. What is council doing to pressure Taswater to improve drinking water reliability and supply? And I'll just ask a series of questions, if I might. Taswater has identified a range of existing environmental and usage factors that affect drinking water supply, and those include potentially nutrient pollution from fish farm hatcheries in the upper Derwent River and agricultural operations, which directly impact the rate at which water can be made safe for drinking. So will council be making demands of the state government to improve river catchment health so that we don't have water restrictions despite having the highest rainfall in 80 years?
Thank you. I think the General Manager can provide a response, but just as a preamble, we did have quite a discussion about this at the Legat General Meeting on Friday, because it I think caught most councils unaware in the south that we would have the restrictions given the, as you say, the high level of rainfall that we'd been experiencing unseasonably lately. But my understanding, it's related to the turbidity that has caused the water situation to become one where we would have to have restrictions. But I'll ask the General Manager to expand on that.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Councillor Cordova, it's fair to say that like all councils in the south of the state, as your GM, I only received less than 24 hours advance warning from Taswater. During that conversation with Taswater, I put to them a number of questions along similar lines to what you've raised regarding the high rainfall, etc. They insisted the reason for the introduction of stage one restrictions was purely related to the increased rainfall and the turbidity levels that were being experienced in the Bryneston Dam in the New Norfolk area. I put to them did it have anything to do with any other water allocations? I particularly focused on the fact that there has been a recent expansion of irrigated land in Tasmania. I was mindful that of the available agricultural land in the state, irrigated land takes up only 8%, yet it contributes 50% of the state's GDP. So I put to them, was that in any way interrelated to the Stage 1 restrictions? They assured me it was purely to do with turbidity in the river system that feeds the Bryneston Dam. So I can assure Council I have strongly advocated with TasWater to make sure that there was nothing other than what they've put out to the community through the media.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a couple of questions in relation to road widths and parking. I'm wondering firstly whether Council has a policy around road widths and occasions on which it will be allowed to park, or it will allow members of the public to park on both sides of a public roadway.
Mr. Reid, can you help us with that one? Oh, you haven't got a microphone. We can certainly arrange that.
Now, through you, Mayor. I guess Council doesn't have a policy per se specifically to deal with that issue. However, we certainly do, as part of the design process, design roads and carriageways cognizant of traffic volumes in accordance with design guides from Austroads and other relevant standards. I don't know that answers
the
question.
No, that absolutely does answer the question. So my second question, therefore, is in relation to Queen's Parade in Kingston. That's a road which is on the Metro bus route, and it is quite a busy bus route, as I understand. Often there are cars parked on both sides of the road, and I understand that there have been a number of near misses and accidents on that piece of road involving both cars and Metro buses where cars have been parked on both sides of the road. I'm wondering, firstly, whether Queen's Parade meets the width standards that would be expected for a road that has buses of that size and cars regularly parked on both sides. And then whether we might be able to review the situation with a view to providing some rectification if possible.
I think we will take that part on notice. I'm familiar with that because when I get the bus, that's the route it takes. And it's a similar situation in Whitewater Crescent. So we'll take that on notice. Perhaps Mr. Reeve could provide some further detail. Any further? Oh, Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. It was hard not to ask a question regarding the Community Services Report due to the amazing projects that they're doing and providing to many people across Kingborough. So my first question related to that was, how is the pop-up youth space going?
We don't have Dr. Stevenson here with us. Can we take that on notice?
You can, yeah. Yes. And the second question was, do we have many community groups or non-government groups who decide not to proceed with a hub booking due to cost? So, e.g., they might inquire about the hub booking, but the cost might be a reason as to why they don't proceed. And the reason I'm asking that is I have had a bit of that feedback from some community groups.
Thank you. We'll take that on notice as well. Any further questions? I'll notice Councillor Grace.
Yeah, can I just refer back, and I know Councillor Bastow might mind, regarding the AGM yesterday at Bruny Island, I actually raised a question when they mentioned the lease, and I asked who was the lease with, Council or Crown? Council solicitors escapes me mind, but Council obviously had solicitors to look at the lease, and I debated with them for some time about whether or not would they be better off to go direct and lease the land from Crown. Now, they're not sure because it got very confusing, because the report they have, that their solicitor or retired solicitor that's been working with council, and by the way, there's no problem with this, it's just a matter of, Councillor Bastone, it's just a matter of tidying the whole document up. I did ask whether this would actually come before full council, and they thought, from their discussions, I think, with Mr. Smee, I'm not sure who's been dealing with, but yes, a report will come before council. That's just okay. To clear that so the councillors know, because they don't mind whether they have a lease with council or Crown land.
Okay. Mr. Smee, can you just... I know you answered this earlier. Could you just provide that information again?
Thank you, Mayor. So there is a council resolution that requires council to negotiate with the boat club in relation to a lease agreement over their boat club premises. As part of those negotiations, the boat club indicated, because it is Crown land, that it may in fact be preferable to have a direct lease with the Crown and keep council out of it. We are at an officer level quite happy with that, but this has dragged on for some time, and what we didn't want was a situation where the boat club have no tenure at all. Hence we put in place a short-term licence agreement pending further investigations with the Crown as to whether they will entertain a direct lease or whether there needs to be a lease with council and then we sublet to the boat club. So as it stands at the moment, we do have some tenure in place in relation to a licence agreement, and the negotiations in respect to a longer term lease agreement are ongoing. It would only be my intent to bring it back to council if there were any specific clauses to be included in the lease that were unusual, bearing in mind that council have already made a resolution to enter into a lease agreement.
Okay, I would actually like, as a councillor, for it to come back before council, but if it's not necessary and both parties are happy, well, that's how it'll be. Just on another matter, Councillor Bastone woke me up, actually. Yesterday, I raised at a council meeting two months, I don't know, about the standard of the rehabilitation that took place down at the boat club. I think the general manager replied to me on that and said that was on the recommendations of our consultants, and that's the case. I did learn yesterday, and I think Sue and Councillor Bastone and I both learnt, that our colleague here, Mr. Reed, has been working very, very, very hands-on, and we learnt that he's approved fill from a property that can come down and be placed over the.
So, can you just clarify your question, Councillor Grace? I'm not clear at the moment what it is.
Well, my question is the fact that it is the question I raised. I thought it was a poor standard of works, but now I find that there are other works that's going to take place to make the project a more, what would you call
it? So your question is it correct that there are further works to do to that project?
Yes, and there's fill to be brought in. The question is that there's fill to be brought in over the top
Mr. Doyle, I think you'll have to share your microphone with Mr. Reid again.
Sorry, but I just need to clarify that, because sometimes we make mistakes in what we're told.
Mr. Reid.
Thank you. Through you, the Mayor. I am currently in ongoing discussions with the Breeny Island Boat Club to undertake some further works on that site from an aesthetic perspective. The works that have been completed in accordance with the design. However, from an aesthetics perspective, there is some further works that we are looking at, which is effectively to cover over the rocks that have been placed and allow vegetation to grow back over through it. I can't confirm the details of that as to exactly what fill material or where the fill materials will be coming from, because that's an ongoing discussion. But yes, certainly there is more work planned for that area.
Thank you.
Could I ask a further question?
Hang on, sorry, Councillor Grace.
On this issue,
I'm happy with that,
thank you,
Madam Chair, but could I just say, in the future, could we be in our works report when these projects, if they're not completed, tell us, so we don't have to, because people ring us and say, oh, what a mess.
Yep, noted. Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Fox.
I just have a concern at that I'd like to ask whether a coastal geomorphologist and an environmental expert has been giving advice on what type of material to use and what plants, because in this environment it's very easy for high tides and onshore winds and erosion, which in fact is undermining that bank, to then distribute material along the foreshore, and it'll be very difficult to remove. So the question is, have we engaged a coastal geomorphologist and an environmental expert in this field?
Mr. Reid.
Through you, Mayor. At this stage, no external expertise has been sought because the works at this stage will only involve works above the high tide level. But we are certainly cognizant of the impacts that any fill material in that coastal environment may cause, and that's part of that ongoing discussion with the Breeny Island Boat Club.
Thank you. No further questions without notice. There were no questions on notice from councillors. Moving now to page 3, petition still being actioned. A report on the petition headed Food Van Trade in Kingston Beach will be submitted to the council meeting on the 20th of December 2021. There were no petitions received in the last period at the time that the agenda was compiled. We move now to officers' reports to council. We have the climate change policy with a recommendation on page 6. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Councillor Midgley, moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Grace.
Sorry. That is fine. Councillor Grace, I thought you had your hand up first. Mayor, but that's okay. Okay, I wasn't prepared for this. Moving it, but that is okay. It is a very important policy that we have before us, and I'm so sorry. I just need to quickly go to it because I wasn't prepared to move it. Excuse me for that. So last Monday, we had an update in regards to the climate change policy and the work that has been completed in this area. As Council knows, it is a very important policy because the objective of the climate change policy is to expand on the commitment to a climate change response within the Council's strategic plan and to underpin the Kingborough Climate Change Plan 2019 to 2024. The first Climate Change Council plan was endorsed by Council in 2019, or one of the iterations. We had a strong discussion on Monday night in regards to the importance of this and some significant debates around the table. And I look forward to what the councillors bring forward into more further and robust discussion tonight and a possible look at the target that is there in a discussion around that to perhaps lower that.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Further speakers? Anybody? Councillor Cordova.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mayor. I just thought we should spring into my proposed amendment, if that's okay. I'll just preface the amendment that I'm about to move by saying that it is an enormous privilege to be on council, and it's in times like this that are potentially, as I see them, quite historical in terms of the opportunities that we have to lead and to represent our community, that it really it weighs on my shoulders significantly the responsibility that we have. And this climate change policy is a good one, and there are many robust things about it, and so I just want to take the opportunity to thank Mr. Doyle particularly and everybody at the council who's involved in really meeting our strategic plan, which recognises that there is a climate change and biodiversity emergency and that we have in place strategies to respond. I would like to propose an amendment tonight to change the net zero emissions target that is in the report that we have before us. Currently 1.9 reads that Council is committed to sequentially reducing its carbon footprint and targeting net zero emissions for Council activities by 2050 or earlier, and I would like to move an amendment to change that target to by 2035 or earlier. Net zero emissions for Council activities by 2035 or earlier.
Do I have a seconder for the amendment, Councillor Gladewright? So if we could just have that amendment moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Gladewright.
Now, I realise at this stage, Mayor, that there's also potentially some corresponding changes that would need to be made in addition to this.
So, yes. So, as you had foreshadowed that you would move that amendment, we would also need to amend... We would need to amend reference in the Kingborough Climate Change Plan 2019-2024, which we passed in March 2019. So as well as, if this, it would be easiest to do the two things concurrently. So I would suggest some words to you, and you can...
Sure.
The words would be, and apologies to Mrs. Morton that I haven't provided that to you earlier, that the action contained in KCE 3.1 of the Kingborough Climate Change Plan 2019-2024 be amended to read, quote, Kingborough Council commits to zero net emissions by 2035 or earlier, 35. That would, just because the, just by way of explanation, because the plan underpins the policy, we need to be consistent in both. So if that is your words.
Thank you. Indeed. That's very helpful. Thank you, Mayor. And so is it worth at this stage, I think probably it's best if I speak to it now, or I could indeed ask the mover and the seconder, couldn't I, to if they're willing to make that change, but it's probably...
Absolutely. Whichever way you want to deal with it, we can vote once or twice. Are the mover and seconder happy with the amendment amendments?
Are you happy with... are you happy to make that amendment as the second? Oh, sir. Yeah.
It's not me.
Oh, yeah, no, you're the seconder of the original motion.
Sorry, yeah.
Sorry. Are you happy with that? Okay.
Okay, so if... All right. Okay, so... Thank you to the mover and seconder. So the substantial motion now adds those 2 points. So it adds 1.9. So that really needs to read C, that clause 1.9 is amended as follows or something to that effect. Yep. And then that becomes D. Well, that would become D, really, wouldn't it? Oh no, both. Either way. Yep. Mover and seconder happy?
Yeah.
If so, floor's over to you. So we're talking on the substantive motion.
Thank you very much, Mayor. As I mentioned before, this could be an historical moment for Kingborough Council in terms of its setting its leadership goal. And this has come before us before, actually, in November of 2020. We received a climate change report from Climate Planning entitled the Kimberley Council Greenhouse Gas Emissions Report, and this was really the report for me that solidified in my mind the need to have large, significant targets and bold targets. And the reason is that the report said, and I quote, "It has been identified that a commitment to net zero emissions by 2035 would demonstrate leadership, be strategically achievable, and potentially reduce financial exposure into the future." This amendment, Mayor, that we've now passed, and indeed this climate change policy in its totality, is important because it's popular, because it saves council money, and because it's what the community expects. We are living in an age of climate and biodiversity emergency, and this policy, I'm proud to say, is future-focused and responsible. And the report that we saw in November showed that modelling suggests that the cumulative cost savings between now and 2050 for implementing abatement actions for the council for net zero emissions, as compared to business as usual, will be approximately, for a leadership goal that is net zero by 2035, a saving to the council of $26.6 million. Now, as the report originally had a target of 2050, if we were to do that 2050 target, the savings would be less than $10 million. So this makes smart financial sense. And that modelling is in the absence of a price on carbon, which could significantly increase council's financial exposure. We know that as a result of climate change, insurance is changing and becoming more expensive. We know that liability for councils is becoming more expensive and potentially we're more exposed. There are physical risks to the community, there are financial risks in the transition, and there are, of course, risks in terms of our exposure to insurance and the like. Across Australia, there are now 43 councils which already have a net zero by 23 target. There's 15 in New South Wales, there's 17 in Victoria, 2 in Queensland, 5 in South Australia, 4 in Western Australia. In Victoria, one third of all the councils have adopted a net zero goal. In fact, there are 10 councils around the country that have already gone carbon neutral. Councils such as Brisbane City Council, Adelaide, Fremantle, Bayside, Colac Otway, Melbourne, Moonee Valley, Moreland and Mornington Peninsula have already achieved carbon neutrality. And we know from the report that we saw in November that we can do it too, that it is achievable and that it will reduce council's financial exposure. The City of Sydney Council, which serves a population of 7 times larger than Kingborough, has agreed to a net zero emissions by 2035 strategy. So has
Point
the council...
Point of order, relevance? Kingborough Council, we're not Sydney Council.
Would you like to rule on that point of order?
There's a long bow there, but it's a short bow.
What I'm trying
just
to demonstrate.
Just don't mention white rhinos.
I promise.
If you mention white rhinos, then I will pull you up.
I appreciate that, Mayor. That's very reasonable. What I'm trying to demonstrate is that our council, we know from our staff and the experts that have been engaged in this, both consultants and our staff, that it is possible for us to attain a net zero emissions target by 2035. 92% of our carbon emissions are coming from landfill, and by having mechanisms to mitigate that waste to landfill, we will be able to achieve and attain this. Why is it important to set goals that are big? It's about having meaningful targets that give you a long-term vision and a short-term motivation. It focuses your acquisition of knowledge and helps you organise your time and resources. If we were to have a target that is very easy to achieve, then we wouldn't be setting a leadership goal. And the fact is that Australia as an entire nation already has a target for 2050, and we were widely criticised for that at the recent COP conference. In fact, the Climate Council of Australia has said that Australia is the worst climate performer out of all the developed countries. So we know that 2050 as a target is not enough. 2035 or earlier is achievable, it's doable, and there's an enormous list of councils that are already doing it, many of which are similar sized to Kingborough. This amendment is popular. An all-time high of 75% of Australians said that they're concerned about climate change. This report and this policy will save us money in the long run. It will create extra cumulative cost savings for Kingborough Council between now and 2050, an extra $16.75 million. This amendment would better reflect our strategic plan, because in our strategic plan it says 1.4 we are a council that acknowledges the existence of a climate change and biodiversity emergency, and this policy will reflect now in 1.3 that council will take a leadership approach. So most importantly, this policy is what our community wants and expects of us, and so I'm very proud and privileged to be on this council at a time that we can hopefully
pass this climate change policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Grace.
Look, I may be way out of order, but I'm listening to everything. But when I hear tonight about water shortage in Tasmania, my head's throbbing. Going back to 1967 when we had very little water supply for Kingborough. Mind you, we've outgrown ourselves many, many times. Mr. Dool, should we also be looking at our water capacity within our own municipalities, such as Long Creek Weir, which is still Margate, the North West Bay River catchment, for future?
Mr. Dool.
Through you, Mayor. Yeah, I think that's an important point, Councillor. I mean, water security will become more and more obvious, and particularly with the growth we're experiencing, we really need to be careful, as has been pointed out. Having restrictions 5 seconds after record rains is a little embarrassing. So, and our mountain water supply, which, you know, currently provides 20%, is going to become really problematical in terms of environmental flows, even more so than the conversations we had years ago. So I think you make an important point that it's something we will have to look at more strategically, even though largely it's outside our jurisdiction.
Yes, Councillor Grace, do you want to put your light back on, though, please, so we can hear you properly? Thank you.
Wrong. Hello. Yeah. Should we add it?
Mr. Dool.
Through you, Mayor. The only reason the plan really did only target what was within our area of control. So I did try and make it what we could actually do ourselves. And strategic water management really is outside our jurisdiction. But it's certainly something we should push hard for to make sure it is factored in, and even that big corporations like TasWater do have proper climate change planning and asset management, because even though we're planning for some townships like Snug, we need to know that they have plans in place for their strategic assets as well. So it is important that we keep on top of these corporations to make sure they're giving it adequate attention, the same as we are.
Light.
I'm out of time, the battery's flat. No, I guess we can really leave that with our officers to be able to bring that forward.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. I'd just like to talk more on the water, or ask you some questions about the water, because over on Bruny Island things are fairly desperate. As we know, we have an aquifer and they've been searching, TasWater have been searching for water. All the way down the channel, people are on tanks. And I'm wondering, is there not anything we can do to make all new houses have extra water tanks? They already have to have a fire tank when they build now down the channel with a different connection, and it has to be at the front of the property. So if we've been able to do that, can we not now say, all right, you need a water tank? And if you're building within Kingborough, you need to put a rainwater tank, a small rainwater tank on the side of your property, which can be used for gardening and things like this. Is there nothing we can do to make people put water tanks on?
Mr. Dool.
Through you, Mayor, and I stand corrected by the General Manager if I've got this wrong, we just don't have a head of power under building regulations and planning regulations. It's the kind of thing, if we wanted to, we could do it by a bylaw or something like that. Mm. But it is a jurisdictional thing. I mean, under the planning scheme, we can make firefighting water tanks, as you say. But otherwise, we just don't have it within our powers to actually enforce it at the moment. So we do need to give ourselves some sort of legal means of doing that, which, as my understanding, would only be bylaw at this stage.
So you're saying that we could pass a bylaw to have this done?
We would need to get legal advice on that, whether it would be in conflict with planning provisions.
Thank you.
Further speakers on the... Councillor Watts.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I highly support this motion. It is very critical. We know around the world, and I don't think there's too many people that don't realise that climate change is happening. Perhaps those in Canberra might disagree with it, but I think the rest of the nation knows it's happening. We were told 15 to 20 years ago that we could expect into the future extreme weather events. And in the last 5 years, we have experienced those. We know that there are Pacific countries, Pacific Island countries, that are going under or think that they will go under very, very shortly. And it's not just the Pacific nations, it's places like Bangladesh as well, which have millions of people. In Australia, we have an option of being a leader, and I think that's what we need to be. We need to set the bar close, and the motion that we have before us does give that. We have, in this municipality, sea level rise. We have cliffs around our area that's falling in. And we also are bushfire prone. And between bushfire to bushfire season, the time is lessening. So what I'm trying to indicate there is an urgent need not to wait. Last time we discussed this, a couple of years ago, there was an argument that we should not lead the pack and that we should wait for other jurisdictions to move forward. If we did that, no one in the world would do anything and we would make this planet unlivable. There are big consequences. Even now, if we are able to bring forward and have others follow. But our children's children's children need a future as well. We are merely custodians for future generations. 2035 for Kingborough, I believe, is a sensible way to go forward. As I said before, that if we don't do it, no one else does it, then it doesn't get done. I think also by going forward to 2035, we can set ourselves up to be, again, someone that's interested, someone that must do something because the situation is critical and would be regarded as a leader both in Tasmania and perhaps the nation. And when you're a leader, there is more opportunity for grants and funding, and that is essential for us. And I think 2035, and Mr. Doole hasn't indicated that he can't meet that target, or his people that follow him can't meet that target. And besides, even if there was doubt, that does give us the opportunity. I mean, it's 14 going on 13 years hence. We will know, and we do know, what our issues are within this municipality. We know the major ones, and we need to work on solving all issues so that we can do this by 2035. And we can talk to other councils. We have a memorandum of understanding with the Whitsunday Regional Council. And I'm sure that any information they've got to help us get there, they would only be too willing to share as we would be prepared to share with them. And I guess the other aspect too is that I would share that information with other Tasmanian councils and indeed probably any other council in the nation. So there is an opportunity for us to exchange information. There's the cost saving as Councillor Cordova suggested. Everything points positive to do this, and as I indicated, Mayor, I wholeheartedly agree and support this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Wilson. Are there further speakers? Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm really pleased and heartened to hear the speakers that have spoken so far, and I'd like to remind the new councillors, I guess, that we have always been a leader in climate change, and in the days of the Whitsunday pact that we had, that we were seen as the leader in Australia on this very issue, and now the Whitsunday people who have taken a lot of our strategies and ideas are the leaders in Australia. So I think it's important that we continue to lead in this field in Tasmania. There are so many things we can do and have done already, and including solar panels on this very building that we sit. We're having solar panels put on our sports centre as we speak. We're already testing electric cars and hoping that our vehicle fleet will go to electric. We're adapting very carefully to the climate change that we're undergoing in our environmental management and also our waste disposal. So there are so many things we can do. There are so many trees that we can plant to help us with this warming climate, and we're sitting here in a very warm room at the moment. We're getting a lot more rainfall and we can expect more rainfall, and we have to adapt and we have to make the most of the situation, because I think we in Tasmania are going to be in a very privileged situation where other people from other states are coming to live here for all the reasons that we are able to adapt and many are not. But we can do that now. We might not be able to do that in another decade. So now is the time to take action, and I thoroughly recommend and support this motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Street, I have next on my list.
Thank you, Mayor. With a question, and like Councillor Glaidwright, I have to apologise for missing the workshop due to other commitments on Monday night, so I would have asked you this question then. My question, Mr Doole, is in relation to the State Government's commitment, or recent commitment, to go to net zero by 2030, which obviously is even better than we've now amended to. My question is whether you think 2030 and matching the State Government's target would be, which as I understand it is a nation-leading target now, whether you think that would be achievable for Kingborough Council.
Mr Doole.
Through you, Mayor, I think it would be achievable, but it would be pretty tough. In my opinion, the advantage they have is that we have a history of production of green energy, and we also have a history of a declining forestry industry. So, and that's not having a go at anyone. It is a bit of a sleight of hand to do that, whereas we are genuinely able to look at our emissions. And a lot of the councillors you quoted there, Councillor, aren't quite as brave as they seem, because we've included waste within our greenhouse gas emissions. A lot of councils don't. So our target of 2035 is quite doable, as I said last time. After the vote last time, I was chastened and I went back and I did put meat on the bones of the waste greenhouse gas emissions. And as I said at the workshop, there's a very good report that we are workshopping in February on waste reduction and minimisation, and it will be linked to greenhouse gas emissions. So I think it will be a lot more obvious now how 2035 is achievable, certainly with what we're doing in all the other aspects, but waste is our main one, as you said. I think 2030... it's doable, but it would be really tough. 2035, I think we could do, particularly if we set realistic milestones along the way. And I think we would make really big progress by 2030 anyway. So it's doable, but I wouldn't like to see it as a target, I have to be honest with you.
Further speakers? No?
Can I ask a question?
So sure.
I'm doing the summing up, is that correct?
You can ask a question,
yes.
But I would like to speak. I was just making
speakers.
Sure there was nobody else. Yep.
Thank you. Just want to double check that. So my question is, so how this policy then enables action. So will we be developing a strategy with milestones to meet the emission targets, and what does this look like and the timeline, et cetera?
Mr Doole.
Through you, Mayor, I always envisaged, last time I put up a report, I did have a draft greenhouse and energy policy attached to that, but obviously that didn't get up either. I was sort of holding that off, and I left a conservative target in here because I knew that was the target we basically had decided on anyway. I was envisaging that an energy and greenhouse policy would flow after February, when I'd been able to shore up all the conversations about the waste side of things, and it was a lot clearer to yourselves how it was achievable. So that's the only reason I didn't go ahead. So I would bring the policy that I'd already drafted out after February, and it would have a plan which would have milestones in it, and it would be specific to each of the areas, like fleet, like waste, like solar, like street lighting, and it would all be in there because that was the figures we were given by climate planning but I've just put more meat on the actual waste one through a different company who really specialise in methane from waste.
Further questions? If not, I'll make a contribution. Before I make my substantive contribution, I just wanted to raise a couple of things. I found a couple of typos because they are my... Of course I did, because they are my favourite thing to find. On page 14, clause 5.4, there seems to be a word missing. So it reads, through its risk management policy and risk register process, Council will identify the risk that climate change poses to its operations and community and progressively implement, should say, and the community. Mildly, if I wasn't being picky, you could get away with it, but for grammatical purposes, it needs the word the in there next before community. And then over on page 15, at 5.13, in the third line, that sentence starts, as such, Council has strived to for strategic partnerships, is meant to read form strategic partnerships, so it's missing the letter M. And I also just wanted to, in rereading this policy today, it actually made me realise that we have a bit of an omission from our policy templates in that the policy template that we currently use, we don't actually have a section in there where we ask how the policy that we're considering links to Council's strategic plan. And I would have thought that that's quite an omission that we just haven't thought of, because we want to make sure that everything that we're doing in a policy sense has some form of link to our vision, to our mission, to our purpose, and so that the community and to our values, as well as the strategic outcomes, so that the community and ourselves can be satisfied that we're not just having policies for the sake of it, but that there is some coherent fit. So, for example, this policy aligns to key priority area 3, which is sustaining the natural environment whilst facilitating development for our future, and specifically the strategic outcomes of 3.3 and 3.5. So I did speak to the General Manager about this earlier, that that might be something that we could take on board for our future policy templates, just for clarity purposes. But just briefly, because I don't want to... I know we had a short agenda today of 66 pages, which is unusual, and yet here we are, 6:30, and we're still only on the first item. But, look, I just wanted to place on record my thoughts in relation to this updated policy. I'm really pleased that we had the opportunity to workshop it last week, because I think it was a really comprehensive presentation, and I think the discussion flowed really well afterwards. But my takeaway message from that was that the new policy is very strong on principles, and they're articulated there at points 1.1 to 1.10, and I think that compared to the climate change adaptation policy that we're revoking, that this is far more encompassing in the issues, and I think that is quite important to us. As others have said, we are regarded in Kingborough Council as a leader in relation to climate change, and I think that's something that collectively we should be very, very proud about. And I think it's something that our community wants to continue to see, and that's why I was really pleased to see that there is agreement to amend the targets for net zero emissions for council activities down to 2035. It's a shame we couldn't sort of stretch it that little bit further and be brave and bold and say 2030, but I think that we should, as my dad used to always say to me about politics, under promise and over deliver. That's obviously something Mr. Doole has is living by as well, so hopefully we can meet 2030, and I'm sure that in the work that we do in the coming years that we will be striving to meet that earlier. I think it's really interesting that, that one of the aspects of this is that the community has to work with us on it, and the community has a significant role to play. This isn't just about us as council being able to meet those net zero emissions, but we need members of the community to come with us on this journey and share that commitment. And I do think there has been a significant shift within the understanding of climate change and the acceptance by the community in the last 5 years in particular, probably even the last 2 years more so. And I know that when the Deputy Mayor and I have been, we've been hosting a series of schools coming to the council chambers over the last couple of months. About grade four classes have been coming here, and the level of awareness, I mean, I remember when my children went through school, they would come home and we'd have the discussions of the environmental things that they were learning, and we went through the whole, you know, if it's mellow, let it yellow, if it's yellow, let it mellow, and all that. If it's brown, flush it down was the key thing at the time. Did you never have that, Councillor Street? You look mortified. I believe you are. that was when it looked. My children are 20 and 21, and that was the motto that they would come home from school with. And they did a lot of environmental education, but now it's the understanding that our young people have is so much greater, and that is demonstrated to us when we have classes who come in, and that they come in to learn about what does local government do, because to most people they have no idea really what we do, even adults. Unless they're engaged, they don't know. And the students are showing such concern for the environment because they're learning about it, and they think that things like what we're doing with the recycling centre there and FOGO, and we've been getting requests lately from schools for FOGO bins because, they're learning about it and the students want to be involved in that. So that's the generation that is coming through now. So I think it does befall on all of us here now to respond to that and to show that continuing leadership. So having said that, I did want to thank Mr. Dool for his work in this area, because we know that this is something that he is exceedingly passionate about, and I believe we're very fortunate as a council to have his expertise and his long-term commitment to the environment and to climate change in particular, because he's been working away very quietly even when climate change wasn't a trendy thing that people used to talk about. So I think we're very fortunate indeed, and I just wanted to echo some of the comments around the table of acknowledging that work today, and looking forward to having this motion passed. No further speakers. If not, Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
I would very much so. Thank you. And thank you so much, everybody, for your contributions, those who have contributed. And just to note just something on what the Mayor said, I think some of us have been trendy for quite a while now, but it's great to see that the trend is catching up. And it also is great to see that so many children are leading the way across Kingborough, across the globe, and very importantly, sharing this message, as Councillor Wass also stated. I'd also like to thank Mr. Dool for your wonderful work in this area for many years, and as the Mayor said, you know, quietly working behind the scenes and bringing forward some really important policies and documents to Council. And thank you, Councillor Cordova, for this really important amendment. I don't know if I need to say this, I think we all feel this, but as we know, the climate crisis, hearing it is both sad and overwhelming, and there is an increasing climate anxiety diagnosis that is happening globally. We, as I said before, like, we know that children are significantly becoming more and more aware of this. And as Councillor Wass said, that as our role as adults and our significant role as leaders, we are custodians and we can make this difference. It is a significant risk to our municipality and has consequences if we do not act, and act strongly. And thank you, Councillor Street, for your thoughts on 2030. It's great to see the trend is catching on. So, councillors, let's take a lead. Let's take on the lead of emissions reductions following the latest and years of warnings from climate scientists. Council has shown leadership, has developed good policy and strategy documents, and undertaken positive change in the climate change area to date. And I hope I'm able to say this quote. It's not really bringing in that much to different information, but local resident Miss Maynard, who we know has been lobbying and writing to councillors for a while and also put forward that motion last year, I think it's important to acknowledge what she said in her email. She said, given the acknowledged global urgency to ramp up responses to the current situation and the climate change and biodiversity emergency acknowledged by council for some years, we believe now is definitely the time to support the earlier target proposed by Councillor Cordova to show the strong local commitment and action needed around council initiatives. So overwhelming climate research tells us that we can't afford to take our time reducing carbon emissions in Australia. Emissions need to plummet now. So I urge you all, and I think this would be a really important vote for the history of Kingborough, to support this motion and this amendment tonight and this policy.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. I'll now put the motion. It's as printed on the screen with the amendments that were incorporated into it. Just for clarity, I'll read it for those following along at home. It's moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Grace, that the Kingborough Council Climate Change Adaptation Policy number 611 be revoked, and B, the Kingborough Climate Change Policy be adopted, and C, to amend the following clauses. 1.9 is committed to sequentially reducing its carbon footprint and targeting net zero emissions for council activities by 2035 or earlier, and the action contained in KCE 3.1 of the Kingborough Climate Change Plan 2019-2024 be amended to read, Kingborough Council commits to zero net emissions by 2035 or earlier. All those in favour of the motion?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We turn now to page 17, nominations for the Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee. Could I have a mover and a seconder, please? We've got a mover in Councillor Bastone, a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you for this. The purpose of this report is to consider the nominations received for representation on the Kingborough Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee for the 2022 to 2023 term. The appointments to the Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee were called for in September of this year, and the aim is to broaden the representation within the committee and to reinstate existing members where possible for another two-year term. And the terms of reference for the Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee allow up to 13 members, 5 from organisations and up to 8 from individuals. When we read through this, we have 11 nominations, some of which are from individuals, or the majority are from individuals, but there are some also from organisations, which include Anglicare, BAPT Care and High Tech Services. There are 11 nominations. I'm not sure if we need to discuss it. It seems to me that it's fairly self-explanatory. There are 11 people. We're allowed to have 13. I've read through the people's their details of their experiences and their interest in disability access, and I think there's a broad range of people here, from people who work in the sector to people who have positive experience within the disability sector, either by being disabled themselves or having a disabled child. I can see no risks with this.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Any further speakers? Councillor Grace.
Look, I think it's good. It just shows, doesn't it, that people are interested in being on a committee, and they do provide valuable input back to council and councillors. I mean, quite often I read something and I think, oh, I never thought of that, but it's brought up in these committees, otherwise it would not be brought to our attention possibly ever. And for six of the original members goes to show that they must be satisfied within the way the meeting procedures are taking place.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Fox.
I just wanted to point out that I think that the Access Committee, as it was originally called, is the earliest committee in Tasmania, the first one in Tasmania, and the longest running. And it's really important that we continue this role. And I think that over the years, a lot has been achieved, but it's so much hard work for these people, especially because a lot of them do suffer from disabilities. And they put their time in and they put their efforts in, and I think it has made a big difference to this community, and I'm very pleased that they continue to put their hands up and that we still get new people who want to come on board, and congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Any further speakers? Otherwise, I'll just, as I have the pleasure of... Councillor Cordova.
Sorry, thank you so much, Mayor. Just very briefly to echo the sentiments of so many others around the table, just to really send my sincere thanks to those members, both past and the ones who are going to be joining the committee, because of the great work that they do. And it is a really significant impost on so many people to contribute their time in a voluntary capacity to help the rest of the community. And so we owe them an enormous debt of gratitude, and I really thank them and I wish them all the best. Congratulations.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. As I was going to say, just briefly, I've had the honour of chairing the what is now called the Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee for about... I think about the last 7 years, and it's to now have 11 people wanting to, five returning members and another six wanting to join the committee is really heartening, because I think a few years back we did struggle to get members along, and then inevitably during the winter period it would be more difficult to get a full quorum because we had less members to draw on, and so we would sometimes have to have an informal meeting. It couldn't be a formal one because we couldn't meet the meeting requirements. But it's a wonderful group to be involved with, and my interest on that committee stems from the fact that I was a carer to my parents, who both lived with disabilities in the last years of their lives. But every meeting I think I learn something new from those who sit around the table about the sorts of things that might meet standards but aren't necessarily practical still. And so I have learned a great deal, and there's a great deal of lived experience there, but also people who have got a theoretical background, having worked for a range of associations. And and given the year's nearly over, I have to mention again that David Vickery, who is on the committee and has been for a very long period of time, is our current Kimbra Citizen of the Year, and quite deservedly so, because Dave, and I'm glad to see David has re-nominated, because he has a long history of involvement in Kimbra spanning about 30 or 40 years of doing things that at one stage he even got a swimming pool for the Kingston Primary School. There used to be a swimming pool there where they used to do learn to swim. So I'm very pleased to see all of those members. It's not clearly articulated, and it should be. I'll get the nomination form changed for next time. It doesn't actually quite show on the form who is nominating from an association and who is not. The numbers there is correct in the report. So I look forward to working with our larger committee as we move forward. Councillor Green.
Question. I haven't seen Mrs. Julie Taylor. Is Julie well?
Julie retired from the committee about a year... sometime throughout this year. She just had a lot of different things on. So she stepped back from the committee, and I wrote to her and thanked her for her extensive service at that time.
Yes, she certainly... Yeah, yep. Thank you.
Yep. Councillor Bastone, did you want to sum up? Thank you. I'll put the motion as printed on the screen, and that is that... the people who are mentioned there are appointed as members of the Kingbury Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee. It was moved by Councillor Bastone, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Oh, we're an agreeable little bunch today, aren't we? Isn't that lovely? Feeling the love. I'm going to hand over the chair to the Deputy Mayor now, because I have noticed a motion.
Thank you, Mayor. We have before us a notice of motion submitted by Councillor Reet titled Biodiversity Offset Policy. Do I have a seconder for that motion? Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Reet.
Thank you very much. I hope we can keep that unanimous feeling of support in the room going with this one. You may recall that when we had been discussing, I think it was a development application some time ago, and we talked about the values applied to some of the trees that needed to be, that were of high or very high conservation value. The question was asked, well, when was the last time that actually the amount per tree had been reviewed, and the response was that it had stayed at that level for quite some time. It's very timely that we actually do have this come before us today, because this morning, along with councillors Cordova and Fox and Bastone, we actually went to a celebration of the Kingborough Environment Fund. And it was at a property down at Oyster Cove, which was the first one in March to sign a covenant. We had a walk around that property, and hearing Liz Quinn, our NAB coordinator, talk about the joy of that the fund finally coming to fruition and being able to actually implement some of those covenants and protect, I think it's around 240 hectares so far in six covenants that have been registered and one to come, as long as a whole lot of other work that has been done on revegetation projects and so on, weed control, eucalyptus research projects, and so on. It was quite a moving experience, because she's been working in this area for so long and was very passionate about it. And we need to remember that with the amounts that are within our biodiversity offset policy, that if there can't be revegetation occur on the development site where there's planned removal, that those monies would go into the Kingborough Environmental Fund. It was pure coincidence that we had that event today that coincided with this motion tonight, but I thought a very appropriate one, and there was certainly a lot of excitement amongst all of the council staff that were there, and also members of the community who have some of these covenants. So I believe we should be having a review of this, and I haven't sought to influence this. It's up to council staff with their expertise to determine what those offsets should be, but bearing in mind that I don't want to see a situation where it's way too easy for developers to not amend plans to knock trees down, but you know, something, there needs to be a fine balance of disincentive and you know, a way to work around things. So I'm assured by the council staff that we can have work done on this and back to us by the end of March, and so I look forward to what those recommendations might be, and hope to have the support of those today. Councillor Grace.
Thank you.
Right, you said you've had a...
Councillor Grace.
Oh, sorry, I forgot I'm not chairing. I just went back into chairing.
What's happened?
Councillor Grace, your contribution. Please.
Yes, you're the chair. Sorry about that. Look, I think a lot of work's got to be done on this, to be quite frank. It's good to put it up. You've got caveats, you've got environmental management, all sorts of things come into this by biodiversity offsets. Firstly, I think council really should consider when firstly approving a subdivision, whether it's one or 20 lots of land. Then we make an order that a tree has to stay there, or whatever, maybe three trees or four trees. Then when the people or a person purchase that land and then have to come and put another development application in, these trees become a drama for them. And I think most councillors know what I'm trying to get through is not making a molehill out of a mountain, but the thing is we need to address this, because... if we do a subdivision and trees are supposed to stay there, then it must be by staff that they are able to stay there, for a start. It should not be fair when somebody buys a block of land, particularly we talk about affordable housing for our future kids, etc., to suddenly come along and then have to pay the council $2,500 or $3,000 to have some trees removed. And it's taken them probably 10 years to try and save enough money to get their money together to be able to get a loan. Then they've got to do a building application. But Mayor, this is only something you've put forward, and I have nothing against it whatsoever. But what I'm saying is, please, and it says here that the works within the final policy to come to council for endorsement, maybe March next year. I believe it's up to staff to stop, think twice. It's another issue with a old homestead where somebody's had a gum tree and the lady might be 90 on her own or 50, you know what I mean? And then the tree becomes such a danger, it needs to be removed. Well, you know, he or she hasn't got that sort of money. So they're the sort of things that we need to look at in refurnishing this by obviously offset. And I hope some of the other councils really understand. We've got caveats. We give exemptions. Am I talking about the wrong issue, Mayor? Beg your pardon? Yeah, well, could I just mention also, with this biodiversity offset, it relates to fire management too, because the biodiversity offset tells people a lot of things they can't do within their property. I don't know whether councillors have followed me or not, but I have a lot of this come to me as a councillor, and I've spoken to the general manager about it, and I think we're getting stuff at the moment from a certain person regarding a property up on the Huon Road, where how does he manage his fire protection. The other thing is too, can I just say quickly, because I'll run out of time, when there's a subdivision done, like down south, where it is heavily bushed, is it an envelope or envelope, whatever you call it, to say, oh, well, this is where you've got to build, that might have been 10 years ago. So the young kids put their application in now, and then they find they're in all sorts of trouble because they've got to remove a lot of trees because of the new fire
time
laws and stuff that's come in.
Thank you, Councillor Grace, for your contribution.
I didn't hear that. Was there somebody?
That's time.
Oh, time. Oh, sorry. Can I have another 40 minutes? If you understand where I'm coming from, they're the things we need all staff to look at.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Sorry, I'm not sure who had their light on next, whether it was Councillor Fox?
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I did, but I turned it off because I thought I was upsetting the system. I guess I'm very keen to look at this. I think it's really important when you look at the value that we place at the moment on a very high conservation tree. It's $500. I could probably buy that wood for firewood and the landowner would make a profit. You know, it's just not acceptable. And for a very high conservation tree, $250 per tree, for a high conservation tree. The value of a tree should equate to the land that it occupies. The value of that land to a developer will probably be thousands of dollars, and we are cutting a tree to make room for a property that would generate a lot of income to a developer, and yet only $500 to council. important that we recognise that there is a loss of habitat, there's a loss of biodiversity, and also endangered and threatened species. There are more and more of them coming on our list now, and the development in our community in areas which are like Blackmans Bay and Kingston, which has got very specific environmental values, and finding places where we can offset those values with like for like are becoming harder and harder. And there are people in the community, like we saw today down at Oyster Cove, who are prepared to give up parts of their property and set and put fences around them just in order to protect that biodiversity. And what this funding would pay for is, for example, fencing to stop stock roaming into those areas, and also planting more white gums, for example, to allow the 40-spotted pardalotes to survive, or other trees that would allow the swift parrots to survive. And if we don't do this, and if we can't afford to do this, we can't go back in time. It's a lost opportunity. And I think we've left it too long, to be honest. We should have been doing this a few years ago. I think it's wonderful that the staff have now brought, or that Councillor Reet, in fact, has brought forward this motion to us tonight. And we do, I think we all need to support this. We owe it to our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify a point that Councillor Grace brought up about safety and a bushfire zone. This, any trees that are under this policy don't relate to any trees that are deemed unsafe. Is that correct?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Good question. The biodiversity policy is put in place for those situations where an applicant, whether that be a developer or a homeowner, has exhausted all avenues to retain a tree, and the policy is designed to provide guidance for council and council officers as to the value of the trees that are removed so that there is a replacement offset.
Mm-hmm. So if a resident had an unsafe tree, in the example of the 90-year-old whose tree became unsafe, this would not apply to her situation.
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor. That is correct. That would be addressed through another avenue.
Mm-hmm. And likewise, similarly with the bushfire protection zone.
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, Councillor Gladewright. That is normally addressed at the time, pardon me, that there is an application for a development approval to erect a new dwelling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I understood that. I just wanted it to be clarified. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification, Councillor Gladewright. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. And Deputy Mayor, our council trades on our clean green image, and it's part of the reason why I think our municipality is so popular and part of the reason why we see such rapid growth in our municipality. So I speak in favour of this motion. I really want to thank the Mayor for bringing this to the table. It's something that I think is overdue, but the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago, and the next best time is to do it right now. So, and I think that this will work in synergy, hopefully, with a street tree strategy that I anticipate that our council will be working towards at some time very soon, I hope, probably sooner than the Aquatic Centre, I reckon. What's important is that the ecosystem services that trees provide are heavily undervalued throughout our society. They're significant and they're long-term. And I'm wearing here on my lapel a swift parrot, and it's an important reminder that these are organisms that we have in our community. We saw at Oyster Cove earlier today, Triceratops orchid that I'd never seen before. The swift parrot, there's about 350 of them around, left on Earth, we think. So this is more endangered than a mountain gorilla. It's more endangered than a panda. Here in Kingborough, I'm not going to talk about the white rhino because otherwise we all know what happens. But we are so blessed in Kingborough to live in a place that is so rich with unique biodiversity, that is so important. And critically, we are responsible for those organisms, not just for ourselves, not just for our children, but for the world. We actually do play a role in this global landscape to make sure that we protect what we have and that we don't see this ongoing encroachment into our biodiversity, that we do everything we can to mitigate and slow that loss. And that's why it's really important that we have a strong biodiversity offset policy. The fact is that in the last few hundred years, 204 years really in Tasmania, we have seen an ongoing diminution in biodiversity. And in fact, Australia has the worst record in the world for mammalian extinction. The worst record in the world. Our flora and fauna is suffering, and here in Kingborough, because we've got rapid growth, we're seeing an enormous number of trees being taken out of urban habitats particularly, but of course right throughout the municipality. We know that these biodiversity habitats and corridors are crucial, but we also know that trees remove pollutants from our air, they absorb carbon dioxide and store carbon as wood, they help control stormwater, they provide other benefits as well, enormous numbers of ecosystem services. So I would like to see, in whatever the biodiversity offset policy becomes, I want to make sure that it is strong, that it recognises things like the City of Melbourne tree valuation tool, the iTree valuation tool, which take into account amenity value, species factor, reinstatement costs, tree condition, locality factor, that take into account these kinds of things to make sure that we are properly assessing the value of a tree. Because trees contribute enormously to our landscape, but they also contribute enormously to our health and well-being and to our sense of place. As I said at the beginning, this is one of the main reasons we trade off this clean green image, and it's one of the main reasons why people love Kingborough, is because of this special and unique biodiversity that we have and the kind of vegetation and remnant vegetation that we still have. It is crucial that as property developers become wealthier and wealthier and have more capacity to use biodiversity offsets as a cost of doing business, $500 for a tree or even $1,000 for a tree. We've seen recently in Hobart that somebody wasn't even perturbed, although they made a big storm in the media, about $20,000 for a tree, $60,000 for a tree. We need to make sure that what we're protecting here is biodiversity. And in fact, you can't really put a price on a mountain gorilla or a panda or a swift parrot or a 40-spotted pardalote or indeed a white rhino.
Oh, you did it. Thank you, Councillor Cordova, for weaving in that white rhino reference. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Thank you so much, Mayor, for putting this motion forward. As Councillor Fox said, we should have probably put it forward a while ago, but it's great and it's timely that we've passed the climate motion, and your visit today, unfortunately couldn't go there, but it all kind of puts it all together. And also noting that the recent engagement with the place score and some other engagement, the bylaw, the community has strongly shown us their value for biodiversity and environment, and what did we get out of place score was actually planting trees in our main street in Kingston. As Councillor Fox said, the value of a tree is so much more, and Councillor Cordova added to that as well around the social, economical and the significant environmental values. And if anybody's interested, there are so many great articles on the value of a tree. It's really interesting reading. There is loads out there and people have done PhDs in this area. So it is really timely. And a quote that I actually read when I was doing some research around this was actually from National Species Day. It was with our NRM staff and with Dr. Bryant, who worked with the NRM staff. And adding again to some of what Councillor Cordova says, the bird species, such as the 40-spotted pardalote, is critically dependent on one tree type, the white gum. Every white gum is important, especially the old trees now. White gum produces the sugary nana it needs to survive and feed the chicks during breeding. The bird uses its beak to farm the nana, and this unusual behaviour is another reason why the 40-spotted pardalote is so unique in the animal kingdom. So I put a thought to that and think, how do we put a dollar value on that? How do I, when we sit here, I've sat here during my time at council, when I see high conservation trees, it saddens me so much at the low amount that developers have to pay, because I think of the 40-spotted pardalote and the habitat that we are taking away. So thank you again, Mayor, for putting this forward. It's great to have your leadership on council.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Grace, do you have a question?
I guess a question, all due respects to Councillor Cordova, the value of wildlife, we're all worried about the value of wildlife, but what value do we put on people's lives?
That's a question I cannot answer.
No, well, it should be answered within this policy.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. My question is, are we going to... We've said where the white gum is important for the 40 spotted pardalo. If it's in an area that the 40 spotted pardalo doesn't fly, because there's not very many of them flying around, do we value that tree less in that place, or is the value of the tree location specific?
General Manager?
That sounds, Councillor Bastone, like a good question to be answered if Council supports this notice of motion.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone.
Just had a question.
Oh, sorry, Councillor Mishley, a question.
Thank you. What would the consultation look like? Do we have any idea? Will it be similar to our other engagements and following the engagement policy, I would gather?
I would hope so, yes. So, and I thought, given that we're talking about sort of... we would workshop it first, was, I thought, given the issues that have, I thought, might be raised today, I thought it'd be appropriate that we have a workshop first and then go out to 4 weeks of consultation. I'm not sure whether we'll have our community engagement officer commenced work by then, so I guess we'll have to be guided by Dr. Stevenson's area as to what that consultation would look like within the resources that we have, and then after that it would come back for council endorsement.
Thank you. If there are no more contributions, the notice of motion we have before us moves.
Can I sum up?
Oh, sorry, Councillor Reid, yes.
You've done my trick. Okay. Catching. See what happens. Look, I just thank you all very much for your contributions on this. I know that there are a number of issues that have been raised, and as I just said, I'd like to see them worked through. I didn't want to put too many boundaries on what staff would come back to us with, because I believe they've got the expertise in this area and we need to be guided by them. But just to clarify, because I sense there was a little bit, I'm grateful that Councillor Gladwright asked the question. We need to be clear that the biodiversity offset policy is not the policy that determines if somebody can chop down a tree or not. That occurs within the planning process. This is totally different. So you need to look at the two things as separate. This is about, if approval is given to chop something down, how much should be paid in compensation if that tree can't be retained, or if vegetation can't occur, revegetation on that place, then it goes into the Kingborough Environmental Fund. So we just need to separate those two things out and not confuse the issue here. So this is about the fact that, you know, we do have a mechanism in place at the moment for compensation, but at the basis of this is it has not changed for a substantial period of time. The other things are about retention of trees are in a separate policy, and probably what I should have done is maybe attach the current biodiversity offset policy to this notice of motion, would have made it clear that what the boundaries are of this particular policy. But I thank councillors for their contributions. I think Ms Quinn will be... It's going to be the end of a very good day for her, because she was very excited this morning at the celebration that we had of the Environmental Fund, and she'll be pleased to know that this is hopefully looks like going to pass tonight. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. We have before us a notice of motion on the biodiversity offset policy as moved by Councillor Reid and seconded by Councillor Fox. I'll put the motion. All those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. And I will hand back over the chair to the Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're on a roll tonight. Everything's been unanimous. Let's keep that going. Let's say, I know, I don't want to... Sorry, I'm wearing my lucky earrings. So we move now to page 31, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session.
The motion is that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence and tender assessment for Garnett Street Stormwater Stage 1. Do I have a mover and a seconder? Moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Westwood. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. In accordance with Kingborough Council's meetings audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session at the meeting will now cease. Thank you to everybody who has been watching so far. The open session of Council adjourned at 7:15 p.m.